Welcome to a new episode of The Brand Called You. Today we have a very, very interesting person who's an environmental activist and an entrepreneur. Jaydhar Gupta, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Jay is a graduate from the Wharton School of Business. He's an air quality expert. He's an air safety activist. He's an entrepreneur with a brand called Nirvana Being. And he has an NGO, which is My Right to Breathe.
A citizens movement.
It's a citizens
movement. Citizens.
So, Jay, let's get straight into the most important topic as we are getting into post-Dashera, pre-Diwali kind of situation. We are going to get into a lot of air pollution. It's beginning to get worse. You have your monitor sitting right next to you, which shows 154. But do explain to me, what does 154 mean before we get into more questions?
So before I tell you about 154, what is the importance of air?
Correct.
We have only three raw materials that our body consumes daily: food, water, and air. Okay. And we lay a lot of emphasis on food and water. And while we consume only about 8 to 10 liters of it in a day, maybe 12 if you are really exercising and your consumption is higher. Air, we consume 12,000 liters a day.
12,000 liters,
24,000 breaths of half a liter each. And that's if you have a pretty normal kind of lifestyle. If you're, you know, somebody who's really active or, you know, more than the average person, your consumption could be more towards, you know, 15 to 16,000 liters of air. So even in weight, 12,000 liters of air is 14 kilograms of air.
Wow.
Okay. And we are the least conscious about it. Air is something we take absolutely granted for because it's just there. And well, the reality is that I learned the hard way that this air is absolutely foul. And it's creating a whole lot of problem. And I learned it the hard way. So this is a personal agenda. In fact, my business is called Nirvana Being. Mm-hmm. Because it was my own ill health that made me conscious. And Nirvana Being comes from Buddhism, relates to consciousness or enlightenment. So the day I became conscious about air, is...
So you were telling me that you spent 11 or 12 years in California.
That's correct.
Was that where your first realization came about the environment, or did it happen when you moved back to India?
You know, interestingly enough, I did my first trip to Jim Corbett Park. I was a very, Delhi wala, Delhi family, first trip to Corbett when I was 6 years old. Okay. And I think it had a deep impact on me. And all through my kind of, I learned how to drive when I was 12. And I remember driving to Corbett by the time I was 14. I used to just take my car and just drive to Corbett. I mean, that was my cave, that's where I was happy.
You started driving at 12 and...
Yeah, I know, I shouldn't have said that on record. I shouldn't have said that on record. But that was my place. And even when I went to Wharton for business studies, because that was, I was from an entrepreneurial family, it was in my DNA and it was the right thing to do. I still, got a specialization in environmental science at UPenn.
Really? Okay.
So I studied corporate finance because that was what was expected of me as an entrepreneur. But I studied environmental science as well. So, that was always like, it was one for the mind and one for the soul. Mm-hmm. And so it was always there. In 2013, after I had moved back to Delhi, I was training for a marathon. I was training to run the classic marathon in Greece with some friends. And one evening, I was hearing like a whistling sound out of my chest. And, I just thought maybe I've overdone it. Take it easy. Won't run for 3-4 days. And that night, I was being rushed to the hospital. I had lost about 40% lung function. They found a patch in my lungs. But even then, it took me 10
and
or 11
what
months.
What was the reason for this patch? The pollution in Delhi?
So when you're active, yes, it's the pollution in Delhi. So I was, not only was I active, which means, so when you're sedentary, your intake of air is about 7.5 to 10 liters a minute. Mm-hmm. When you're running, it's about 150 liters a minute. Okay, so it's like a 20x, and you're also pulling those pollutants deeper into your alveoli, right? So all that filth is going, faster into your bloodstream. Right, so, into your respiratory system and from there into your bloodstream. And I was running at the worst time of the day, which is morning. So morning air, because it's cold, is the dirtiest. And, you know, we've been trained, or it's in, again, in our DNA or upbringing, you know, that morning air is the best. Everybody wakes up and opens their doors and windows to ventilate the homes. And I was running in that air. So I was talking, you know, I was doing the worst thing. And, you know, this is what I talk about now. I've learned the hard way that I have to unlearn everything I know.
In fact, you know, it's interesting you say this, because when we moved back from Singapore in 1996, I distinctly remember on a hot day,
yeah,
if I took a white hanky and wiped my forehead, it would be black.
Yes. Now you're getting me to another subject that I'm very passionate about, because Delhi moved from, I think you called me here as an entrepreneur, but I'm going into activist mode.
No,
now.
Let's talk activist.
Okay.
We're going to talk about your passion of getting our air clean.
So, you know, if you remember the late 90s, we had this problem of diesel soot, right? It's the stuff that you can collect on ceiling fans or in the chimneys, in the kitchen, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
That problem has become less, not because it's gone away. Mm. We've replaced it with a much more harmful pollutant, which is emissions from CNG, which are not visible.
Mm-hmm.
They're smaller than 1 micron, and they're a lot more harmful. So it's a false sense of comfort.
I see.
So, you know, if you speak to some of the senior doctors in our town, you will find out how the entire disease burden of Delhi has shifted post-CNG.
Okay.
So pre-CNG, 70% of disease in Delhi was communicable diseases.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick, I touch you, or I sneeze on you, mm-hmm. you get sick. Now, post-CNG era, 70% of the disease burden of Delhi is non-communicable diseases. Heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, depression, respiratory problems, of course, asthma, COPD, cancers. All of these problems have really kind of accelerated post the CNG era.
Okay.
So it's a false sense of comfort. Maybe we want that black stuff back.
It's probably. So coming back to air, you know, you have built an entire life in the last, whatever, 8-10 years,
right,
around educating people on the need for good air.
Right.
And I've often said, you know, and I've laughed about it, when we see headlines in papers that Delhi air has moved from hazardous to poor.
Yeah.
And we celebrate.
Right. Right.
Tell me, what are the causes of this poor air?
So, you know, the primary kind of contributors to the air pollution problem, and not only in Delhi, pan-India, because the problems are the same.
Yeah.
It's number one is use of biomass for cooking, right? 60% of India will, you know, use wood or cow dung, dried cow dung to light their chulas, right? And the poor people will light their chula, you know, between 6 and 7 in the morning and after 7 p.m. when the air is cooler, and which means it kind of just sits down where we breathe. It doesn't, you know, disperse, especially in the wintertime.
Correct.
So it's interesting, because Delhi believes that our air pollution problem is due to paddy burning, because that's what our CM has been telling them for 5 years. You know, Mr. Kejriwal.
And it isn't.
That Delhi's problem is paddy burning.
Okay.
If you look at October, November last year, you had only 13 hazardous days in October, November combined. That includes paddy burning and that includes Diwali. If you look at December, January, you had 39 hazardous days. That's because the temperatures have dipped further. It's the coldest time. Everybody is burning. Your chowkidars are burning to stay warm. It's about survival. People are cooking. All the pollutants are kind of staying down where we breathe. That's why we get absolutely smoked in December, January.
Yeah.
And that's the time when everybody has their guard down. All the schools schedule their sports days. I mean, it's a mess. There's complete lack of information in my universe.
Wow. Well, that's an amazing revelation to me.
Right.
That it's not the crop burning which is causing all the problems.
You know, the crop burning is like a maximum 15-day phenomenon.
Amazing.
And it's the same time as Diwali. So, you know, it's... And the crop burning as well, you know, we're not close to the source. I mean, it's coming at a little higher kind of atmospheric, you know, conditions and whatnot.
Mm.
We're not at the source of it.
Okay.
But you know, when we burn our lori in January and, you know, when we do all the crazy things we Hindus do, because every festival of ours involves some form of
fire.
Burning.
Yeah.
and fire, every function of ours, my only festival. We're at the source, even when we do those havans in our in our house. The other day, my wife was burning Google, you know, to cleanse the house. And I came in and I was gagging. I started wheezing immediately and I turned on my monitor and my PM levels were over 1,000. I mean, we do all these things without, you know, because it's just on autopilot. Yeah, we've been doing it for years and we don't realize.
So then, you know, one more question before I come to government. I've read somewhere that air pollution is a very, very localized problem. So what's happening, say, in Delhi may not affect Gurgaon. What's happening in Gurgaon may not affect Noida. Is that correct?
No, I disagree on that. My prediction is that, you know, just like water, wars will be fought over air.
Okay.
So what happens, what's happening right now is the winds are westerly and our farmers that are burning the paddy as we speak around Amritsar, all that smoke is blowing into Pakistan.
Okay.
The moment this monsoon recedes in the next 7 to 10 days, the wind will change. And Pakistan's smoke will blow into India. Just like, you know, the Indonesian smoke blows into Malaysia and Singapore.
Correct.
So it's, you know, air knows no boundary. Correct. I mean, that's why I keep telling people, you know, citizens and residents that, you know, this is a problem that we're going to have to fix. Don't point your finger at other people, you know, or government, point it at yourself, because the change has got to start with you. And you can't build a wall high enough. You know, we are so used to having a Swachh home and we don't care what's outside it. Well, that's got to change now.
So what are the changes that we can make as individuals? And what support can the government give?
See, let me start with the government, because I think as far as government is concerned, it's a very easy fix. Okay. The one, you know, let me talk about what causes air pollution first, right? So I said biomass burning. Use of fossil fuels, obviously. So we have all these climate change conversations going on because of fossil fuels. We have all these industrial emissions. We have great laws, but no enforcement for industrial emissions. We have all the vehicular, you know, emissions as well. And it's you know, I think 95% of Delhi will live within 0.5 kilometer of a major highway or a major vehicular passage. So you're at the source. You're at the source of pollution when you're within 500 meters. Other than that, we burn all our waste. We have no effective waste management. Otherwise, you know, if it's not burned, it's just, you know, these mountains that you see around the country. We have no effective, you know, reuse, recycle, upcycle kind of program. And, you know, it's only now that we're starting to talk about all these things, and segregation and composting and all these things. Of course, plastic is another big problem because a lot of plastic is burnt. A lot of tires are burnt.
Correct.
So the kind of chemical, you know, pollutants. Of course, in rural India, because of all the use of pesticide, the paddy burning stuff that's coming in, and it also is infused with chemicals. And of course, we do no good to each other with all our fireworks at all our occasions and whatnot. So those are the sources of pollution. Now, what can the government do? For the government, you know, the government has access to all the data. For every month of the year, there have been source apportionment studies done by the IITs where they know every month what percentage of the air pollution is coming from what source.
Okay.
So you really get down into attacking the source, right? Right now, the government is not going anywhere near the source and they're saying, acha, you know, when it gets really hazardous, hum odd even kar denge. When it gets to, you know, a PM level of 300, we'll ban diesel generators. I don't want it to get to 300. I'm sorry. You know, so you're like doing this band-aid fix. You know, I'm so responsible as a government. That's not the fix. The fix is going after the sources of pollution.
Okay. So let's look at some of the sources you just spoke about.
Right.
You know, you spoke, the number one reason you said was because of
biomass burning. Right.
And I think, I'm not sure what the impact is, but maybe with all the gas being given out, will that be one answer?
Absolutely. In fact, BJP missed a very, very strong kind of political trick there, because they launched this Ujjwala scheme, but they didn't tie it to air pollution.
Okay.
They're actually solving an air pollution problem.
So I hope someone from the BJP is listening to
us. No, now they know. We've spoken to them. It's missed a very important.
The second thing you spoke about was the transportation, which is that 95% of the people live within half a kilometer of major vehicle roads.
Yes.
Not much can be done about that.
Well, you know, I think we need to. So, a private car is a privilege, right? I think we need to make the ownership of a private vehicle more expensive difficult. Or more difficult.
Yeah.
And I think we need to use that money that we collect, like Singapore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very expensive to own a vehicle in Singapore. And they've invested all that money that they get off of that taxation into public transportation. Similarly, in Paris, you know, when they have bad air days, they ban vehicles and they make public transportation free. So it's actually very simple. If you look at the whole problem, you know, if I started getting taxed on the kilograms of waste that are coming out of my house every day, I'd stop producing waste.
Okay.
You just have to incentivize good behavior and penalize bad behavior.
And then the third area that you spoke about was scrub burning.
Yes.
You said last year in October, November, we had 19 hazardous days.
13, October, November. Yes.
13.
Yeah.
So, government can play a role in that as well on trying to reduce? Or not?
Absolutely. I mean, look, there are some very easy fixes to that, right? So, this paddy burning problem came up because Punjab and Haryana, because they didn't have water in June, delayed the sowing of the crop. So in yesteryears, the paddy used to be harvested in September, where it was still warm and the whole, you know, paddy burning phenomena would just disperse with the winds, right?
Correct.
You had winds in September, you know, monsoon receding, all that, blow it away. Now that it's coming, you know, later when the air is slightly cooler and that cooler inversion has happened, these pollutants are staying closer to where we're breathing and affecting us. So one, we can, you know, now we have a lot of great canals and, you know, water availability even in the peak summer months. So you can change the timing. Or you could just disincentivize the growth of paddy in Haryana and Punjab.
Okay.
I mean, you can do it in the coastal areas where we have enough water, we have the coastal winds to disperse. So there's a fix for everything.
I understand.
I mean, they're trying to, you know, get these harvesters and all that in. I mean, do we, you know, we're not a country that can park those harvesters for 6 months of the year because paddy's only harvested in October and April.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then coming to the second part of the discussion, which was, what can we as individuals do?
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
You know, just examine everything you do every day.
Mm.
I mean, you know, we were talking before the cameras came on about just your going shopping and not, you know, taking your own cloth bag. Our parents used to do this really right? You had that thermos that was made of steel or copper. You had that tiffin that was made of steel. And that stuff lasted for decades, right? It's our generation that has kind of fallen to all these conveniences. And it's also corporate mechanisms that have kind of made everything so easy and available to us. That, you know, we've fallen into this convenience trap. So, you know, examine everything. I mean, when you sit in your car, I mean, let me give you a small one that, you know, your friends and my friends are doing. I mean, a diesel vehicle has the emissions of 9 petrol vehicles.
Right.
So, don't buy diesel vehicles. You know, our government subsidized diesel and pushed everybody towards diesel because we didn't have electricity. But, you know, now the delta between diesel and petrol is very small.
Yeah.
Don't buy diesel vehicles.
Okay.
I mean, I've been driving electric for 6 years.
Okay.
I have no problem, you know, with it. I have two electric vehicles. I've driven close to 125,000 kilometers in electric in Delhi. No issues at all with charging or anything.
Fantastic. So the question, you know, again, we were just speaking that, you know, you mentioned our parents had one view, which was, you know, a lot of reuse takes place.
Right.
Then I'm older than you, but I think you're in my generation seems to have messed it all up. But there seems to be a very big realization amongst our millennials and younger on the importance of our environment. What are your thoughts on them? You speak to thousands of school children every week.
you know, that's a segment that I rest a lot of my hope on. But then I'm also guarded. You know, if you look at our entire system of schooling, okay, the role models themselves, so who are the role models? The teachers, the parents, right? The role models themselves don't practice what they preach, right? So the child has kind of gotten into this comfort zone. This is all theory. So even when I'm going and talking to school children and talking to them about, you know, how grave this danger is and, you know, how risky it is for them to play between, you know, October and March, you know, in North India and whatnot, the child is listening to all of this, but then they're not seeing any alarm at home with the parents or with the teachers. We have a lot of good schools in Delhi now that have made, you know, pollution masks part of the winter school uniform. Okay. But if the parents are not wearing the mask, if the teachers are not wearing the mask, if the security in the school and the malis and the, you know, the bus drivers are not wearing the mask, it kind of dilutes the whole effort, right? It sends a mixed message, ki, you know, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Why do I have to wear
a mask? Why do I have to wear it? Because, you know, out of choice, nobody wants to wear a mask. Yeah. So it's that same thing, you know, going on with schools. Let me give you another example. You know, every year, so I'm the one who moved the Supreme Court to move the Airtel half marathon from November to October.
Wow.
Okay. So since my lungs, you know, went through irreparable damage from running, this is something I felt passionate about. Firstly, I got trolled by the running community.
Right.
I mean, I'm a runner and I love to run. And Airtel half marathon is a beautiful, beautiful event. And I wasn't trying to take that away from anybody. You know, I just petitioned the Supreme Court to move it into October or February, where it would be at least a 40% lower exposure to the pollutants in those months. So firstly, I got trolled. Secondly, in the month of November every year, in the same week of the Airtel half marathon, our chief minister of Delhi, Mr. Kejriwal, would declare an air emergency and call schools off. And the same week, he would be flagging off 31,000 people to run. And I said, you know, what is the message that's going on, you know, going out to the public? Is this a public health emergency or not? You know, you got to be very clear on your stand. And as government, you can't be sending mixed messages to the citizens. And that's all we've seen. I mean, there's just so much confusion about air pollution. There is no clear messaging. There is no health advisories. You know, for the record, in 2015, I was asked to join an air pollution think tank of the Delhi government. And there was... only thing I went to every meeting was that please issue health advisories. You know, people are not going to, you know, change any behavior. And for 5 years, I haven't seen any change. We're all still doing the same things. Because unless people understand this is a public health emergency, and unless there is a consistent, committed kind of commitment, kind of committed action towards dealing with a public health emergency, everybody's just like, you know, it's just more of the same. And most Indians actually live with the myth that, hey, I'm Indian. I was born in this filth and I'll die in this filth and I'm immune to this. You know, that's a myth that exists. People don't understand this is not an allergen. You're dealing with toxins that are entering your body with every breath. 12,000 liters a day.
Amazing. That's an amazing statistic. But, you know, I say that my lungs are hardier than my children when they come back overseas. So obviously that's incorrect.
Listen, nobody is immune to this stuff.
Okay.
You know, the stuff that's entering your body, these are nanoparticles of black carbon. So we are only talking about particles that are smaller than 2.5 microns because our natural filters of our body can't filter it. So our nasal hair, mucus and membrane, anything larger than 2.5 microns, you'll get trapped in your upper respiratory tract. So when we drink hot water or tea or we clear our throat, that's anything larger than 2.5 microns. Anything smaller is going right into our lungs from there, you know, getting into our bloodstream.
Interesting. So Jay, you're wearing a t-shirt that says having a bad air day and you've got lungs all over your t-shirt.
Right.
And you've got two devices.
Yes.
One is around your neck and one is next to you, which we started talking about at the beginning.
Right.
Tell us a little bit with air beginning to get worse as we reach Diwali.
Right.
And as you've been saying, as we get into November, December, when it gets colder.
Yeah.
What can I, as an individual, do to protect my lungs and my
right.
and my health?
Right.
And how can I use some of these devices?
Sure. So, you know, actually, Let me tell you my journey, because, you know, it was through a chance conversation with somebody at the American embassy that I learned about air pollution. Mm-hmm. Because this lady went on, was wearing a mask, and then went on to tell me her symptoms. And I thought, you know what, wearing a mask is easy. You know, and I had been on medication for about 11 months at this point. I'm talking about October 2014.
Okay.
So, I read about these masks, pollution masks, and one in particular called Bog Mask. Everybody from Stanford Medical Center to, you know, doctors in China were talking about it. So I imported a bunch for my kids, my wife, my parents. And in 3 weeks, I was rid of all medication.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was like, you know, I got to have a way to measure it. Okay. Because air pollution is invisible. I mean, we're sitting in this beautiful living room. You know, there's a sense of comfort, there's a sense of peace of mind. And yet, you know, there's this little device here that's telling us that, you know, the air here is poor.
With a big red band around
it. With a red big...
It's hazardous, right?
Yeah, it's poor. It's poor. So, you know, there's a false sense of comfort. So, you know, I needed to get a device that would allow me to see the invisible. So I started surrounding myself with all these things to protect myself and my family.
Mm.
And very soon, you know, as friends and family came over, they started asking me for these tools, and it became a business. And, you know, that's how the journey started. So now I'm very, very scientific about it. And if you kind of look at the portfolio of products in Nirvana Being, it actually, every product there came out of my need. So the mask that I'm wearing around my neck here, this is my mask that I used to run.
Okay.
So I don't want to give up running. I ran for three years indoors with a medical grade air purifier on a treadmill. And you know, when you exercise in a closed environment, you run or you exercise in boatloads of your own carbon dioxide. So that oxygen going to that brain, you know, that kick that you get from exercising doesn't happen.
Mm.
So I realized that very quickly because I have all the monitoring equipment. So I wanted a solution to run outdoors and still be safe. And, you know, so this is a product that I launched for that. It's the ID mask. It's got a lower breathing resistance and a wider surface and a silicone seal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're absolutely secure when you're running outdoors. In fact, every Sunday we have a run at India Gate called Dare to Run.
Okay.
I created my own run. It's a masked run. It's limited to 50 individuals. And so 50 of us, you know, run every Sunday at India Gate and we engage people. We smile at everybody. We wave at everybody. We're just trying to spread awareness and consciousness. You know, people are just not aware. The government is not doing what they're supposed to do. And people don't know anything about air pollution. So there's a false sense of comfort. Now there's a bigger problem because we've got a chief minister who's telling everybody that he's fixed air pollution. Mm-hmm. Because we had 2 months of, you know, good monsoon, you know, good rain and wind. So, you know, you've got all this mixed messaging going on. It's really sad.
So someone also sent me an interesting message on WhatsApp, which said that if you put 3 or 4 different types of plants inside your rooms,
right,
they help to manage the air inside. Is there any truth in that?
So, you know, in an indoor environment, you've got 3 primary pollutants, right? One is PM2.5. The other is volatile organic compounds, which is essentially anything that smells. We have all these cleaning things and deodorants and perfumes, and of course all the tadkas that we do in our kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, all of that is, you know, volatile. Even if you get flowers and they smell, that's all VOCs.
Mm-hmm.
And the third is carbon dioxide, because when we sit in closed rooms, we are consuming the oxygen and creating carbon dioxide. So plants will help us a very little bit with VOCs and with carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
I think the greater benefit of plants are, you know, they reduce stress and hypertension because they're calming.
Yeah.
You know, they're balm to the eyes, they're calming. In fact, you know, it's a myth that the primary pollutant in India is PM2.5, particulate matter that is smaller than 2.5 microns. And plants do not impact PM2.5 at all. In fact, PM2.5 impacts plants. If you see our plants outside now, all the trees, beautiful trees that we have in Delhi, they now will become dormant because the PM2.5 closes the stomata from where the trees breathe. So they stop producing oxygen. So we have seen our November, December CO2 levels, ambient outdoor levels, go up, which is why it is part of Mr. Kejriwal's agenda to hose down trees in a city that is looking at running out of water. I don't know how that is viable, but that's what he's planning to do.
Amazing. A lot of people are now buying air purifiers.
Sure.
Is that of any help?
Look, most of the air purifiers that I've tested everything, okay? And all these air purifiers that are available in India are machines that were created for a Singapore or a London or a Paris, where the worst air quality day you get to about 150. Okay, in North India, your good days are at 150, and your bad days will average, you know, 600, 700, 800, or you know, even more than that.
We are at 152 on your monitor right now.
We are at 152 right now in indoors here. So that's the problem. Most of the air purifiers available in India will only keep you safe from March to October, when your levels do average about 150. From October 15th to about March 15th, for those 150 days, with all your household brands of air purifiers, all bets are off. They're not going to bring you anywhere near the, you know, the safe range. I personally use medical grade machines that were created for operation theaters, where that one machine is equivalent to having 40 machines of the household name.
But tell me, by implication, that means that, if I, whether it's a medical grade air purifier or whether it is what is available commercially.
Right.
In order to keep myself safe,
yeah,
I should just lock myself into a room because the air outside is bad.
Well, it won't help because, there is, air is everywhere. Right. So those pollutants will still come in, and you'll still have to have a way to ventilate that room. Otherwise, you're going to lose consciousness from the CO2 buildup, from the carbon dioxide buildup. So there's no safe place. And unfortunately, we are going to, you have to use technology because, I want to say this, from the time we start a consistent, committed effort, from the time we get a green government who's willing to go after this problem, from the time that citizens are on board to actually fix this problem as well, it's going to take us at least 2 decades to fix this problem. So, for those 2 decades, you and I have no choice but to find ways and means to protect ourselves.
That's been a fantastic chat with you. And I think we're probably going to call you again, for there's so many things happening in this thing. But one last question, which is a personal question that, sure, I like to ask, and I would have loved to ask you more, but the conversation on air and pollution was so interesting. One personal question to you.
Yes.
Tell me, what is your biggest learning from your biggest failure?
So I started the first call center in India, taking 800 calls from the US.
Okay.
And, I was 25 years old, way ahead of the pack, got a great angel round together, got a great, VC fund, Warburg Pincus, to back us. I was on top of the world, 25 years old. I was sitting on $7.5 million of cash. I'm talking about 1998. Okay, that was a lot of money. It's still a lot of money, but back then it was, a lot of money. And we decided to be the first company to move to voice over IP. So it's interesting because we were a case study for Cisco and AT&T, because we were the first company to go voice over IP across the world, 12,000 miles. We just couldn't onboard a client because all our clients were still running, traditional telephony. And while people were very intrigued, especially the tech companies like Microsoft and Dell, we just couldn't bring a client on. So sometimes, it doesn't pay to kind of be that thought leader. It burnt us. I mean, we ran out of gas. We couldn't bring a client on. The sales cycle was just too long.
That's amazing. So Jay, I've got to thank you very much. Your conversation today has been an amazing learning for me. I mean, sure, my biggest takeaway, other than everything else that you said, is 12,000 liters of air every day.
Right.
For someone who is leading a normal life, and 24,000 if you're a reasonably active individual.
I told you got to unlearn everything you know, because my parents always taught me that you are what you eat.
Right.
So now I tell everybody, you are what you breathe.
Absolutely. So thank you very much.
Sure.
And we must get you again to talk about so many other things of your activism part and then your entire entrepreneur journey.
Sure. Love
thank
to.
You. Really yeah. appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.